Chapter 72. While the worst passions of the worst men were thus working in the dark, and the mantle of religion, assumed to cover the ugliest deformities, threatened to become the shroud of all that was good and peaceful in society, a circumstance occurred which once more altered the position of two persons from whom this history has long been separated, and to whom it must now return. In a small English country town, the inhabitants of which supported themselves by the labor of their hands in plaiting and preparing straw for those who made bonnets, and other articles of dress and ornament from that material, concealed under an assumed name, and living in a quiet poverty which knew no change, no pleasures, and few cares but that of struggling on from day to day in one great toil for bread, dwelt Barnaby and his mother. Their poor cottage had known no stranger's foot, since they sought the shelter of its roof 5 years before, nor had they in all that time held any commerce, or communication with the old world from which they had fled. To labor in peace, and devote her labor and her life to her poor son, was all the widow sought. If happiness can be said at any time, to be the lot of one on whom a secret sorrow preys, she was happy now. Tranquility, resignation, and her strong love of him who needed it so much, formed the small circle of her quiet joys, and while that remained unbroken, she was contented. For Barnaby himself, the time which had flown by, had passed him like a wind. The daily suns of years had shed no brighter gleam of reason on his mind. No dawn had broken on his long, dark night. He would sit sometimes often for days together on a low seat by the fire, or by the cottage door, busy at work, for he had learnt the art his mother plied, and listening, God help him, to the tales she would repeat, as a lure to keep him in her sight. He had no recollection of these little narratives. The tale of yesterday was new to him upon the morrow, but he liked them at the moment, and when the humor held him, would remain patiently within doors, hearing her stories like a little child, and working cheerfully from sunrise until it was too dark to see. At other times, and then their scanty earnings were barely sufficient to furnish them with food, though of the coarsest sort, he would wander abroad from dawn of day until the twilight deepened into night. Few in that place, even of the children, could be idle, and he had no companions of his own kind. Indeed, there were not many who could have kept up with him in his rambles, had there been a legion. But there were a score of vagabond dogs belonging to the neighbors, who served his purpose quite as well. With two or three of these, or sometimes with a full half dozen barking at his heels, he would sally forth on some long expedition that consumed the day. And though, on their return at nightfall, the dogs would come home limping and sore-footed, and almost spent with their fatigue, Barnaby was up and off again at sunrise with some new attendants of the same class, with whom he would return in like manner. On all these travels, Grip, in his little basket at his master's back, was a constant member of the party, and when they set off in fine weather and in high spirits, no dog barked louder than the raven. Their pleasures on these excursions were simple enough. A crust of bread and scrap of meat, with water from the brook or spring, sufficed for their repast. Barnaby's enjoyments were to walk, and run, and leap, till he was tired, then to lie down in the long grass, or by the growing corn, or in the shade of some tall tree, looking upward at the light clouds as they floated over the blue surface of the sky, and listening to the lark as she poured out her brilliant song. There were wild flowers, to pluck the bright red poppy, the gentle harebell, the cowslip, and the rose. There were birds to watch, fish, ants, worms, hares or rabbits, as they darted across the distant pathway in the wood, and so were gone. Millions of living things, to have an interest in, and lie in wait for, and clap hands and shout in memory of, when they had disappeared. In default of these, or when they wearied, there was the merry sunlight to hunt out, as it crept in aslant through leaves and boughs of trees, and hit far down deep, deep, in hollow places like a silver pool, where nodding branches seemed to bathe and sport, sweet scents of summer air breathing over fields of beans or clover, The perfume of wet leaves or moss, the life of waving trees, and shadows always changing. When these or any of them tired, or in excess of pleasing tempted him to shut his eyes, there was slumber in the midst of all these soft delights, with the gentle wind murmuring like music in his ears, and everything around melting into one delicious dream. Their hut, for it was little more, stood on the outskirts of the town, at a short distance from the high road, but in a secluded place, where few chance passengers strayed at any season of the year. It had a plot of garden ground attached, which Barnaby, in fits and starts of working, trimmed, and kept in order. Within doors and without, his mother labored for their common good, and hail, rain, snow, or sunshine, found no difference in her. Though so far removed from the scenes of her past life, and with so little thought or hope of ever visiting them again, she seemed to have a strange desire to know what happened in the busy world. Any old newspaper, or scrap of intelligence from London, she caught at with avidity. The excitement it produced was not of a pleasurable kind, for her manner at such times expressed the keenest anxiety and dread, but it never faded in the least degree. Then, and in stormy winter nights, when the wind blew loud and strong, the old expression came into her face, and she would be seized with a fit of trembling, like one who had an ague. But Barnaby noted little of this, and putting a great constraint upon herself, she usually recovered her accustomed manner before the change had caught his observation. Grip was by no means an idle or unprofitable member of the humble household. Partly by dint of Barnaby's tuition, and partly by pursuing a species of self-instruction common to his tribe, and exerting his powers of observation to the utmost, he had acquired a degree of sagacity which rendered him famous for miles round. His conversational powers and surprising performances were the universal theme. And as many persons came to see the wonderful raven, and none left his exertions unrewarded, when he condescended to exhibit, which was not always, for genius is capricious, his earnings formed an important item in the common stock. Indeed, the bird himself appeared to know his value well, for though he was perfectly free and unrestrained in the presence of Barnaby and his mother, he maintained in public an amazing gravity, and never stooped to any other gratuitous performances than biting the ankles of vagabond boys, an exercise in which he much delighted, killing a fowl or two occasionally, and swallowing the dinners of various neighboring dogs, of whom the boldest held him in great awe and dread. Time had glided on in this way, and nothing had happened to disturb or change their mode of life, when, one summer's night in June, they were in their little garden, resting from the labors of the day. The widow's work was yet upon her knee, and strewn upon the ground about her, and Barnaby stood leaning on his spade, gazing at the brightness in the west, and singing softly to himself. "A brave evening, mother. If we had, chinking in our pockets, but a few specks of that gold which is piled up yonder in the sky, we should be rich for life." "Apostrophe, we are better as we are, apostrophe," returned the widow with a quiet smile. "Let us be contented, and we do not want, and need not care to have it, though it lay shining at our feet." "Apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Barnaby, resting with crossed arms on his spade, and looking wistfully at the sunset. "That's well enough, mother, but gold's a good thing to have. I wish that I knew where to find it. Grip and I could do much with gold, be sure of that." "Apostrophe, what would you do?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe," she asked. "What? A world of things. We dress finely, you and I mean. Not grip, keep horses, dogs, wear bright colors and feathers, do no more work, live delicately and at our ease. Oh, we'd find uses for it, mother, and uses that would do us good. I would I knew where gold was buried. How hard I'd work to dig it up." "Apostrophe, you do not know, apostrophe," said his mother, rising from her seat and laying her hand upon his shoulder, "what men have done to win it, and how they have found, too late, that it glitters brightest at a distance, and turns quite dim and dull when handled." "Apostrophe, eh, eh, so you say, so you think, Apostrophe, he answered, still looking eagerly in the same direction. For all that, mother, I should like to try. Apostrophe, do you not see? Apostrophe, she said, how red it is. Nothing bears so many stains of blood as gold. Avoid it. None have such cause to hate its name as we have. Do not so much as think of it, dear love. It has brought such misery and suffering on your head and mine as few have known, and God grant few may have to undergo. I would rather we were dead, and laid down in our graves, than you should ever come to love it. Apostrophe, for a moment Barnaby withdrew his eyes, and looked at her with wonder. Then, glancing from the redness in the sky to the mark upon his wrist, as if he would compare the two, he seemed about to question her with earnestness, when a new object caught his wandering attention, and made him quite forgetful of his purpose. This was a man with moldy feet and garments, who stood, bareheaded, behind the hedge that divided their patch of garden from the pathway, and leant meekly forward, as if he sought to mingle with their conversation, and waited for his time to speak. His face was turned towards the brightness too, but the light that fell upon it showed that he was blind, and saw it not. A blessing on those voices. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the wayfarer. I feel the beauty of the night more keenly when I hear them. They are like eyes to me. Will they speak again, and cheer the heart of a poor traveler? Apostrophe, apostrophe, have you no guide? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked the widow, after a moment's pause. None but that, apostrophe, he answered, pointing with his staff towards the sun, and sometimes a milder one at night, but she is idle now. Apostrophe, have you traveled far? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a weary way and long, apostrophe, rejoined the traveler as he shook his head. A weary, weary way. I struck my stick just now upon the bucket of your well. Be pleased to let me have a draught of water, lady. Apostrophe, why do you call me lady? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she returned. I am as poor as you. Apostrophe, your speech is soft and gentle, and I judge by that, apostrophe, replied the man. The coarsest stuffs and finest silks are apart from the sense of touch alike to me. I cannot judge you by your dress. Apostrophe, come round this way, apostrophe, said Barnaby, who had passed out at the garden gate, and now stood close beside him. Put your hand in mine. You're blind and always in the dark, eh? Are you frightened in the dark? Do you see great crowds of faces now? Do they grin and chatter? Apostrophe, apostrophe, alas. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the other, I see nothing. Waking or sleeping, nothing. Apostrophe, Barnaby looked curiously at his eyes, and touching them with his fingers, as an inquisitive child might, led him towards the house. You have come a long distance, said the widow, meeting him at the door. How have you found your way so far? Apostrophe, use and necessity are good teachers, as I have heard the best of any, apostrophe, said the blind man, sitting down upon the chair to which Barnaby had led him, and putting his hat and stick upon the red-tiled floor. May neither you nor your son ever learn under them. They are rough masters. Apostrophe, you have wandered from the road to, apostrophe, said the widow, in a tone of pity. Maybe, maybe, apostrophe, returned the blind man with a sigh, and yet with something of a smile upon his face, that's likely. Handposts and milestones are dumb, indeed, to me. Thank you the more for this rest, and this refreshing drink. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as he spoke, he raised the mug of water to his mouth. It was clear, and cold, and sparkling, but not to his taste nevertheless, or his thirst was not very great, for he only wetted his lips, and put it down again. He wore, hanging with a long strap round his neck, a kind of scrip or wallet, in which to carry food. The widow set some bread and cheese before him, but he thanked her, and said that through the kindness of the charitable he had broken his fast once since morning, and was not hungry. When he had made her this reply, he opened his wallet, and took out a few pence, which was all it appeared to contain. Might I make bold to ask, apostrophe, he said, turning towards where Barnaby stood looking on, that one who has the gift of sight would lay this out for me in bread, to keep me on my way? Heaven's blessing on the young feet that will bestir themselves in aid of one so helpless as a sightless man. Barnaby looked at his mother, who nodded assent. In another moment he was gone upon his charitable errand. The blind man sat listening with an attentive face, until long after the sound of his retreating footsteps was inaudible to the widow, and then said, suddenly, and in a very altered tone, "There are various degrees and kinds of blindness, widow. There is the connubial blindness, ma'am, which perhaps you may have observed in the course of your own experience, and which is a kind of willful and self-bandaging blindness. There is the blindness of party, ma'am, and public men, which is the blindness of a mad bull in the midst of a regiment of soldiers clothed in red. There is the blind confidence of youth, which is the blindness of young kittens, whose eyes have not yet opened on the world. And there is that physical blindness, ma'am, of which I am, contrary to my own desire, a most illustrious example. Added to these, ma'am, is that blindness of the intellect, of which we have a specimen in your interesting son, and which, having sometimes glimmerings and dawnings of the light, is scarcely to be trusted as a total darkness. Therefore, ma'am, I have taken the liberty to get him out of the way for a short time, while you and I confer together, and this precaution arising out of the delicacy of my sentiments towards yourself. You will excuse me, ma'am, I know." Having delivered himself of this speech with many flourishes of manner, he drew from beneath his coat a flat stone bottle, and holding the cork between his teeth, qualified his mug of water with a plentiful infusion of the liquor it contained. He politely drained the bumper to her health, and the ladies, and setting it down empty, smacked his lips with infinite relish. "I am a citizen of the world, ma'am," said the blind man, corking his bottle, "and if I seem to conduct myself with freedom, it is therefore. You wonder who I am, ma'am, and what has brought me here. Such experience of human nature as I have leads me to that conclusion, without the aid of eyes by which to read the movements of your soul as depicted in your feminine features. I will satisfy your curiosity immediately, ma'am, immediately." With that he slapped his bottle on its broad back, and having put it under his garment as before, crossed his legs, and folded his hands, and settled himself in his chair, previous to proceeding any further. The change in his manner was so unexpected, the craft and wickedness of his deportment were so much aggravated by his condition, for we are accustomed to see in those who have lost a human sense something in its place almost divine, and this alteration bred so many fears in her whom he addressed, that she... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.